breeze raced over the bridge and the city beyond. It was magical, in an ancient kind of way. I could just imagine the ceremonies they'd once had here.
Badass,
a voice murmured from beside me. I turned to see Ollie, his gaze wide. Harris and Carol stood next to him, along with Jude, and another man I didn't recognize. I spun, catching sight of about 15 more people behind us. Everyone was here. Let's go. I started for the bridge, Kate at my side. We've got this, Carol murmured. I hoped so. Without Anna, there'd be nothing. I stepped on the stone bridge, and a vibration of magic sang up my leg. I looked up at Cade. Be ready for anything.
I feel it,
he murmured. I drew my throwing daggers and jogged across the bridge. On either side, the water gleamed murkily in the moonlight. As we neared the middle, the magic in the air became stronger. A fierce prickle that made my hair stand on end. Protective charms. Nearby, the water splashed. I jumped, whirling. Everyone stopped in their tracks, frozen. The water splashed again, big enough that it could actually be the freaking Kraken. Then a monster burst forth, mouth gaping wide, with serrated teeth gleaming in the moonlight. It hurtled for the bridge, cutting through the water with unnatural speed. It looked like a giant monster frog, a demon from the depths.
Quail-oh,
Cade said.
Mythical Aztec beast.
How do they think up these things? It should have been kind of silly, but instead, it was freaking terrifying. And my measly weapons wouldn't do any good against something of this size. The beast crouched in the water, eyeing us from 20 feet away. Gauging the distance for its next jump? I shuddered, then dug into my satchel and pulled out a random potion bomb, then hurled it at the beast. It exploded in its mouth, a plume of blue smoke rising into the air. Nothing happened. Crap! Someone heaved a massive fireball, but it too was devoured by the monster. Caro's deadly water jets bounced off the beast. Then the thing was on us, leaping through the air with its jaws open wide. Its gaping maw was so big, it could swallow me without chewing. We threw ourselves to the ground. The beast sailed overhead, water and slime dripping coldly onto our backs. A loud splash sounded from the other side of the bridge. I scrambled to my feet, leaning over. It was turning around, making a big circle to try again.
It devours our magic,
Cade said. Could be growing stronger, Caro added. My mind raced, heart thundering. The water called to me, a living thing that I could feel, as if it were an extension of myself. I had no freaking clue if it would work, but... not like I had a lot of options. I called to the murky water, feeling every molecule and envisioning it rising up, forming a great wave. It did as I commanded, water sucking back from the shore and gathering underneath the giant fanged frog, picking it up like a boat on the sea. Back! I screamed, and the water flowed away from the bridge, carrying the beast with it. The monster leapt from the mounded wave, but I forced more water at it, catching it in mid-leap and carrying it away. Then I turned and ran, desperate to get off the damned death bridge. Ahead of us, a dozen war cries rent the night. Warriors burst from the ground, ghostly gray figures of muscular men and women, wearing feathered headdresses and carrying spears. Their blazing blue eyes landed on us, and they charged. Shit, there had to be over 30 of them. The bridge was only wide enough for two at a time. They charged onto it, footsteps thundering as they waved their spears and shouted. Even with my new charm, my sonic boom might destroy the bridge and send us into the water with the Quetzal. So that was definitely out. I couldn't bet everyone's lives on it working. Though they were a ghostly gray color, they looked solid. I prayed weapons would work. I hurled one dagger, then another, striking two in the chest. They stumbled and fell. Their companions leapt over them. Duck! Caro screamed. I ducked low. Water streamed over my head, spearing through the chests of two ancient warriors. They tumbled back into their compatriots, but were soon overrun.
"Trade me,"
Cade shouted. Caro joined me in the front, shooting her deadly water spouts, while I dug into my pouch full of potion bombs. A big part of me really liked using Ricketts' own magic against him. I hurled the bombs at the warriors, lighting one on fire and coating another with acid. They both leapt into the lake. Caro took out the next two, but there was an endless stream of them. The rest were nearly upon us now, only 5 feet away.
"Switch!"
Caro yelled. Cade took her place. I drew a shield and my sword. He drew his, and we collided with the warriors, blocking with our shields, slicing through their wooden spears, and jabbing with our blades. In the tight quarters, I remained keenly aware of Cade. Last thing I needed was to take out my backup. Finally, we reached the end of the bridge, spilling into a mass of the warriors. But at least we had more room to fight. I called upon my sonic boom power, throwing it out in front of me to clear a path. It exploded, bowling over dozens of the fighters.
"Go!"
I raced through the opening, headed for the massive pyramid in front of us. Anna was up there. I could feel it. Cade stayed close by my side. I sprinted full out, determined to get past the warrior guards. A quick glance behind showed that they'd closed back around our fellow fighters. The Protectorate was holding their own, though, keeping the warriors occupied while Cade and I ran for the pyramid. On either side, smaller pyramids dotted the path, but it was the enormous one, at least 300 feet tall, that we needed to reach. The moon was getting low. Dawn was near. Was Ricketts waiting for dawn? Many ancient sacrifices had been timed around the sun. I sprinted faster, trying to ignore the magic that prickled at my skin. As we neared the pyramid, I thought that maybe I could make out the figures on top. There were more on the stairs, about a quarter of the way up the pyramid. Two of them. Guards.
"Watch out!" I screamed.
The figure on the right, his cloak whipping in the wind, raised his hands. Magic exploded on the air. The ground beneath my feet rose up. He was controlling the earth. I leapt off the rising ground, stumbling onto flat earth, then kept running. I had to get close enough to throw a sonic boom or potion bomb. We were still so far away. The figure on the left hurled a bolt of lightning at us. It cracked, loud in the night, and the flash made my vision go. Blindly, I dived left, skidding on the ground and narrowly avoiding the strike. Then the earth began to rise beneath me. My heart thundered as I scrambled to my feet and ran across the rising earth, leaping over loose gravel and trying to find the steadiest parts. When I reached the edge, it had risen over 8 feet in the air. Cade ran below me, having avoided the rising earth. I took a running leap, trying to break my fall by rolling. Pain sang up through my leg as the ground tore at my skin, but I managed to make it to my feet and keep running. A lightning bolt shot right at Cade, but he dodged, leaping aside. Then his round shield appeared on his arm. He heaved back, then hurled the thing at the mage. It sliced off his head. He flew backward, crashing into the pyramid and lying still. The shield turned in the air. The earth mage roared, throwing out his hands. Again, the earth began to rumble and rise. But the shield silenced that mage too, taking off his head just as neatly.
"Nice!"
I gasped, running as fast as I could toward the pyramid. Sweat poured down my face. The sky began to lighten. Dawn was definitely coming. Finally, after what felt like ages of running, we reached the edge of the pyramid. More than 1,000 normal steps led upward, a staircase cutting through the large stone ledges that made up the major steps of the pyramid. My lungs already burned, and my heart felt like it was going to explode, but I began to climb, racing as quickly as I could. What I wouldn't give for the buggy right now. Those wheels could tear right up these stairs.
"Go ahead of me,"
I shouted. He was so much faster. He nodded and ran, but only made it up a short way, before the stone ledges on either side of him began to shift. A stone jaguar leapt out of the pyramid, charging for him. He returned his sword to the ether, and then brilliant silver light swirled around him. A second later, the huge wolf stood in his place, then lunged for the jaguar. They collided in a mass of fangs and claws, wrestling on the stairs. Holy crap! Still pretty insane to witness. I ran past them as Cade grappled with the cat, leaving him and the rest of the Protectorate behind. As the sun rose, it was just me. Running out of time. I was halfway up the pyramid when an ear-piercing shriek rent the air, chilling my skin. I looked toward the sky, gasping when I caught sight of the winged snake. It was huge. White feathers decorated its wings, and green scales gleamed in the low light of gloaming. The snake dived for me, hurtling through the sky. I lunged away from its gaping jaws, barely avoiding a bloody death. The creature swooped high into the sky, diving back to take another shot. I called upon my sonic boom power, grateful as hell to have this magic. But he needed to be close, so I could ensure he was hit with the hardest part of the blast. He was so big, I'd have to throw everything at him. I waved my arms. Come and get me! He hurtled toward me, mouth gaping to reveal gleaming white fangs as long as my arm. My heart leapt into my throat as I powered up my magic. Come on, come on. He was nearly on me, so close that I could smell his fetid breath. With a scream, I threw my magic at the beast, using the charm to help my accuracy. The sonic boom tore through the night, slamming into the monster and sending him tumbling through the sky. Thank fates. I spun, sprinting for the top of the pyramid. The sky was now red as fire, the dawn sun lighting up the ancient ceremonial site. When I reached the platform at the top, my lungs burned and sweat poured down my face. I gasped, taking in the scene. Anna was tied to a pillar, wind whipping her blonde hair away from her face. Ricketts stood in front of her, a gleaming black dagger raised. Red sunlight glinted on the blade. No! I ran for them, hoping my scream would distract. Ricketts jerked, then brought the blade down, right into Anna's flesh. Chapter 12. Rage and fear filled me to bursting as I sprinted for them. Ricketts whirled around, his dagger dripping blood. His black coat whipped in the wind, and his eyes gleamed with power. Good, you're here. I reached into my satchel and hurled a potion bomb at him. He dodged it, rolling to the ground. Anna thrashed against her bonds, blood pouring down her shoulder. Thank fates, not a fatal blow. Ricketts rose to his feet, glowering at me. You use my own magic against me? Duh! I grabbed another potion bomb. I like the poetic nature of it. He reached into the pocket of his long black coat and withdrew a round glass vial. But instead of hurling it at me, he threw it to the ground. I lunged for him, afraid he'd run again. But instead, a great orange cloud of fire burst up from the ground. Ricketts waved an arm toward me, and the flame rushed forward. I hurled a sonic boom toward the flame, but it sailed right through. Crap! That never happened. Fire always exploded against my sonic boom. But not Ricketts's crazy fire. I dived low, covering my head. The fire blazed over me, singeing my back. I leapt up, drawing one of my daggers from the ether and hurling it at Ricketts. He dodged, but it plunged into his shoulder. He howled. Good. Tit for tat, just like he'd given Anna. I raised my other blade, but before I could throw it, he shoved something into his mouth. A half second later, the air turned gray around him, swirling until he turned into a tornado. Crap! The thing was huge, roaring in the quiet dawn. This was the new magic he'd been given. It thundered toward me, tearing across the top of the pyramid. My heart thundered wildly as I called on my magic, throwing the biggest sonic boom I could manage. It cracked loudly in the air and crashed into the tornado, disrupting the wind pattern. The thing exploded, throwing a human Ricketts off his feet.
Anna!
I ran for her, drawing my sword. She grinned, her face creased with pain and her shoulder pouring blood.
Bree! I gotcha!
I sliced the bindings at her back, and she tumbled forward. I tried to wrap an arm around her waist, but she pushed me off.
We gotta fight.
She grimaced, then threw out one of her protective shields as Ricketts rose to his feet. I prayed he was almost out of his strongest spells. How many could he fit in those pockets? The sun blazed bright on him, lighting his face up with a red glow that made him look like the devil. In fairness, the goatee didn't help matters.
You two are more trouble than you're worth, he hissed.
I edged behind Anna's shield, powering up my sonic boom. He hurled another vial to the ground. This time, an ice monster burst forth, 8 feet tall if it was an inch. It gleamed in the light of the rising sun. Ricketts waved his arm, and the beast thundered toward us. Bree charged up her shield, her magic swelling on the air. The luminescent barrier grew, but the ice monster kept coming. My heart thundered. I drew my sword and shield from the ether, ready to take on the ice monster if I had to. But these things were strong.
Please work, I begged on a shield.
The beast roared as it neared, mouth opening to reveal long fangs made of ice, then slammed into the shield, breaking into 1,000 pieces. As Ricketts stared in shock, I dived low under the barrier and hurled my sonic boom at him. It burst through the air and bowled him over. I sprinted for him, sword drawn, and leapt onto his prone form, straddling him. Before I could get my blade to his throat, he bucked, throwing me off. Suddenly, he had a dagger in his hand. He lunged for me, slicing at my side. Pain seared. Panic rose. I kicked him in the stomach. He gasped, rolling away from me, but I scrambled after him. He was climbing to his feet. If he had a transport charm, he'd get away. But Anna was there, kicking him hard in the shoulder, right where my first dagger had landed. He howled and flew backward. I leapt onto him, lining my blade up with his throat, the point of my long sword pressed to his skin. His eyes fluttered open.
"Why do you want our blood?" I demanded.
"Because of what you are."
"What are we?"
I pressed the blade deeper against his throat. Blood trickled down his neck. He grimaced.
"You don't know? Tell me!"
He chuckled, a pained expression on his face.
"Oh, this is rich. She'll get a kick out of this." "Who? Who is she?"
I pressed the blade slightly deeper, enough to threaten.
"And what are we?"
A shadow cut out the rising sun. With my peripheral vision, I caught sight of Anna, Cade, Caro, and Ollie walking toward us, across the top of the pyramid. More of the Protectorate followed.
"Back up."
A few moments later, they stopped, circling us. Ricketts's eyes darted around to the rest of the group. A wild kind of fear, then determination, filled his eyes.
"I'm dead anyway. She'll kill me for failing."
"What the..." He thrust himself upward toward the sword, forcing the blade to pierce his throat. Arterial blood sprayed me.
"Damn it!"
I rolled off of him, gagging. He choked on his blood, then lay still, dead eyes staring toward the sky. I collapsed onto my butt, chest heaving.
He killed himself.
The bastard had killed himself rather than reveal what we were. Cade nudged him with his toe.
"Smart man."
Caro nodded. Son of a demon didn't want to give up his information.
"Probably thought we'd torture it out of him,"
Ollie said. I looked up, disappointment and anger filling me.
"Would you?"
They all shrugged.
"Not likely, but possible," Jude said. "Depends on what's at stake, how evil he is."
Anna stepped forward,
pressing a wadded-up cloth to her bleeding shoulder. She kicked Ricketts in the ribs, then spit on him. Then she met my gaze. Let's get out of here.
Chapter 13.
Emily transported us back to the Protectorate in groups. Anna and I went last, along with Cade and Ricketts's body. I didn't know what they were going to do with him, and I didn't ask. But then again, leaving bodies on top of archaeological sites was some pretty weird littering, so maybe they were just cleaning up. It was still dark when we arrived, the early morning hours cold and silent. As soon as we appeared on the lawn in front of the castle, Caro and Harris hurried over to us.
Come on, Caro said.
We'll head to the infirmary and get patched up. Then it's eating time. Since I ached all over, that sounded like a good idea. Food wouldn't be too bad either.
There's a procedure to these things, Harris said. You can't forget the beer, Caro. That's step 3 of celebrating a victory.
Fine, fine, she grinned. Procedure is everything.
I looked over at Anna, suddenly at a loss. We'd done our job, catching Ricketts, and they'd done theirs, providing backup and getting us our buggy back. So we should be leaving now. But I was unsure, and it was obvious from her expression that Anna was too. I didn't want to like it here, or to need to be here, but we did. We had nowhere to go, and it was possible that our concealment charms were gone, now that Ricketts was dead. And this place was actually pretty awesome. It was hard not to like. I glanced over at Cade, who stood only a few feet away. The idea of leaving him made my chest ache, which was also pretty annoying, really.
Stay, he said. I think someone will want to talk to you in a little while. You'll want to hear what they have to say.
Who? I asked. He just shook his head.
I'd tell you if I could.
But then you'd have to kill me? He sighed dramatically.
Rules are rules.
A tiny chuckle tried to escape me. Come on, Caro said. Eating time.
Hang on.
Jude walked toward us and stopped in front of Anna and me. She looked at us both. You did well, you two. Most initiates don't have the training or skills that you two have. But your time in Death Valley taught you well.
Well, it was that or die, Anna said.
I grinned, but Jude's words warmed me.
Whatever it was, I hope you'll consider the paranormal investigative team when you complete your training.
Ooh!
Caro's brows rose. What an honor! Thank you. I nodded at Jude. I appreciate it. I still didn't know if we were staying, but it was nice to be invited. To be wanted. After getting patched up and eating a meal in the great hall with everyone, I was ready for a nap. Not that I knew where I'd take that nap, in the temporary room we'd been given, but it didn't matter in the end. Cade came and found Anna and me. He'd eaten on the other side of the hall, away from us, but I hadn't been able to keep my eyes off him. Anna said he hadn't been able to keep his off me either. His timing must have been impeccable, however, because I'd never noticed him looking.
Will you two come with me? He asked. There's someone who would like to meet you.
Someone new? He nodded. I looked at Anna. We both shrugged, then rose and followed him out of the raucous great hall, and toward the same room that had pulsed with power yesterday. The one that felt like strength and power. As we neared, the feeling of magic grew stronger. Even more so than yesterday. It was like the push and pull of massive waves. I gasped, reaching for Anna's hand. She gripped mine hard, clearly feeling weird as well. I looked at Cade. He looked totally unaffected.
What is that? Anna asked. I'll let her introduce herself.
Cade stopped at the door.
Her?
Magic of this strength was coming from a person?
Wow.
He knocked, then pushed it open. The magic that rolled out nearly sent me to my knees. Kay gestured for us to enter. I sucked in a deep breath and walked in on shaky legs.
Anna followed, entering a room that was full of brilliantly colored paintings on the tall walls. The door shut behind us. I could feel that Cade wasn't in the room, but all my attention was on the figure in front of us. If it was a woman, then she was unlike any I'd ever seen. She gleamed with a pale white light, her features almost reptilian. When she stood, her form shimmered, as if she weren't really there at all. Almost like she was a ghost. "Welcome, Bree and Anna." Her voice resonated with power, though it wasn't loud. Thank you." I shot Anna a quick glance, then approached the table. "But who are you?" She gestured to the chairs in front of us. I eyed her warily as we sat. She followed. "I'm a rock, the spirit of the dragon who gave her magic to create this castle." "Dragon spirit? Holy crap. I'd never met a freaking dragon before. They were at the top of the paranormal pecking order. The protectorate was formed by dragons." "Yes. Before the Order of the Magicka and the Shifter Council formed, as the governments of the magical world, supernaturals needed someone to protect them, to help those in need when an injustice was done. So the dragons stepped in. Before they went for their long slumber, the dragons gave a small part of their magic to the undercover protectorate. It was their gift to the world. I volunteered to create the castle and be the spirit that would oversee operations, to the best of my ability." "Holy crap," Anna breathed. "The protectorate is cooler than I thought. There are dragons here." Arak gave a small smile. "I am not able to stay here for long, however. It is difficult to control my corporeal form." "But you came to meet us. What the heck was going on?" "Yes, you are special, Bree and Anna. There is something very unique about you. I thought so from the moment I learned of you, but these last few days have proven that to be true." "Cade told you about my magic?" "Jerk. I'd wondered if he'd blown my secret. I didn't know what that crazy water power was, but I certainly didn't want anyone else knowing about it." "No," Arak said. "He has not spoken of you at all. Your mother told me about you." "My mother?" Anna and I spoke in unison. "How?" I demanded. "She wrote us a letter just before she died, wanting to bring you here. Because of what you are, and the risks that the outside world poses to unknowns, such as yourselves." I stiffened. Anna did as well. "Don't worry." Arak held up her hands in a placating gesture. "We don't feel the same way as the Order of the Magicka. Unknowns are safe here. Valued." My muscles relaxed, but only slightly. The Order was famous for persecuting those who were different and powerful. Unknowns were both. "How can we trust you?" "You wear the mark of power," Arak said. "The four-pointed star mark at the top of your spine." Shock dropped my stomach to my feet. I glanced at Anna. Only our mother knew that we had those marks. Our mother had truly believed that revealing our species would get us killed. Yet she told Arak. She trusted Arak. "If she sent you a letter before she died, why did it take you so long to find us?" Anna asked. "That was 10 years ago." "After she died, you ran immediately. When we went to the homestead in Alaska, you were gone. We finally found you about a year ago. Then we watched, waiting to see if you were worthy. That you were who your mother said you were. But when we realized that you were being harassed by Ricketts's men, we sent Cade and his fighters." "Good timing. Did you determine that we are who our mother claimed?" "You are. When your magic became unreliable, Bree, we knew that the change was coming. And I can feel that you have more magic now. Another power." I hesitated, but only briefly.
Arak was no Khan dragon. I can control water now. It just happened, but I don't know why. Anna shot me a WTF glance.
Arak smiled. You will be powerful, but you must learn to control your magic, else it will devour you. Body. Mind.
Devour? Anna's voice quavered. My insides did the same.
Yes, unknowns have great magic that manifests later in life. Bree, you are going through that change now. If you can learn to control it, your true species will be revealed. If you cannot, you will stay an unknown. A dead unknown. Because your power devoured you from the inside out. Like a dying star. Though the process may not be quick, it is different for everyone.
Shit! I'd known about the changes coming. Not about the potential dying. Can you help me learn to control my magic?
She nodded. We are your best hope. You will have to train hard. And you as well, Anna. Not just for your own benefit, but so that you can one day join one of our divisions. It is a great honor, but you must prove yourselves worthy.
I glanced at Anna, my head reeling. Do you have any idea what our true species is? Anna asked.
Arak shook her head, but her brow furrowed. I do sense something in you, but I'm not sure. A familiarity, as if your magic were related to dragons somehow. Just like my mother had said.
We're not fire souls, though, right? Anna asked.
No, you are not. Something different.
What the heck could that even be? How many unknowns are there? I asked.
In the last 100 years?
Just you two. Her expression sobered.
3, if you count your sister.
My heart leapt at the mention. Do you know where she is? Anna demanded. Is she alive? I asked.
I do not know, Arak said.
Would you help us find her? I asked. That would be huge.
Arak hesitated a moment, then nodded.
Yes. You must focus on mastering your power. That takes precedence. But we will help. That was fine. I didn't want to collapse in on myself like a dying star, so I was happy to make the deal. But that didn't mean I couldn't keep negotiating.
How's the pay? I asked.
Quite good, depending on which division you join. Not what you used to earn in Death Valley, but you wouldn't need as much. We'll take care of concealment charms, if the one that Ricketts gave you has faded with his death. It is vital that you continue to hide what you are from the outside world.
Our mother's prophecy is true?
Yes. Someone will seek to use you, even kill you, for what you are.
Not great.
But not you, Anna asked.
I wanted to fist bump her, because that was a damned good question.
A small smile creased Arak's face. I hope that it will be mutual. We will help you master your powers, and in return, you will work for one of our divisions, helping to protect the magical world.
We've never worked for anyone else, I said. I don't really want to. And frankly, I don't think I'd be any good at it.
Once you're trained, which I imagine you won't like, as you will have to take orders, you will be on your own. Most jobs are self-driven here. You do as you see fit. We're built on trust.
Trust? Just as Cade had said.
Don't forget that you could have friends here. Security. A life.
Arak's eyes seemed endlessly knowledgeable at this moment, like she knew what we lacked.
She did, because this was sounding tempting.
I looked at Anna, who gave a tiny nod. I met Arak's gaze.
A trial period. 2 months.
Arak smiled and nodded.
Excellent. I am glad to hear it.
Happiness burst inside me.
I might be conflicted about working for someone else, but I'd really wanted to stay. At least for now. I don't think I'd realized how much. A quiet knock sounded on the door. Perfect timing. A rock rose and drifted toward the door. We stood and followed her.
So you really built this place? I asked.
Yes. The magic was a gift from the other dragons before they went for their slumber. But this place is built from my blood and bones, and now my spirit guides it.
Wow, that's a serious gift, Anna said.
Arak smiled and opened the door to reveal Caro. Caro here will show you to your new apartment. Remember, train hard and be worthy.
Caro waved to Arak. I turned to say goodbye, but the dragon spirit had disappeared into the air.
Immediately, the immense magic that had filled the room faded a bit.
Caro bounced impatiently from foot to foot. Her platinum hair was in wild disarray, and excitement gleamed in her steely eyes. For someone with such a terrifying and deadly magical gift, not to mention a stone-cold attitude in battle, she was much more chipper and light-hearted than I'd expected.
So, what did you think? She asked, her eyebrows wiggling. You got to meet Arak. She normally never comes to see new members.
Yeah, that was wild, I said.
I had no idea that the Protectorate was this cool, Anna said.
It is.
Caro's face sobered a bit. But she means it. You really do have to train hard and be worthy. It's our motto, and boy do they mean it.
We had excellent motivation to try, at least.
Since you're staying, let me show you to your new apartments.
I glanced at Anna, intrigued.
All right.
Caro led us up the great stairs and through a maze of hallways of all styles. Some done with silk wallpaper and chandeliers. Others still in their original castle form, complete with flickering wall sconces. At one point, the pugs of destruction raced by, each carrying a large ham in its mouth. The last one, the winged pug, farted as it ran by.
Watch out for them, Caro said. They'll steal the beer right out of your hand.
As we neared the back of the castle, mullioned glass windows provided a view of the grass lawn and an ancient stone circle.
Cool.
As a girl who lived in shitty wooden houses in the middle of nowhere her whole life, it was pretty dang awesome.
Caro stopped in front of a wooden door painted deep blue.
This one's for you, Bree. Anna, yours is the one next to it.
She pointed to a door about 20 meters down.
Come on, I'll show you up.
We followed her up the spiral staircase. The space was empty for the first 30 feet, with glowing yellow lights dotting the walls, and we only reached an actual room near the top. Caro pushed open a door to reveal a round living space. I stepped in, my heart fluttering in my chest. I hated myself for it, but I honestly felt like a kid on Christmas morning. The space was round, with a beautiful living room on one side and a kitchen on the other.
Gorgeous.
Until now, all we'd had was shitty hand-me-down furniture that had been crap 50 years ago. This was so perfect and so pretty that I could hardly believe it.
It's amazing, Anna said.
No, this is amazing.
Caro strolled toward one of the windows on the wall and waved us forward. I followed, my head buzzing slightly. When I caught sight of the sweeping view of the cliffs and ocean at the back of the castle, I gasped. The stone circle sat right below my window.
See? Caro said. Nice, right?
Each tower is enchanted to look the way the inhabitant wants it to. She spun around, gesturing to the decor.
Apparently you like the modern, contrasted with the historic. Very nice, if I do say so. Mine looks like a pixie unicorn vomited rainbows all over it.
I wouldn't peg you as the type, Anna said.
Caro shrugged. We like what we like.
If someone had asked me what my design aesthetic was, I'd have said something like, not broken. Apparently, this tower knew me better than I knew myself.
This is insane. The luxury of this place boggled my mind.
Are you freaking serious? They let you live here.
Why not?
She shrugged.
People give up a lot to work and live here. She hesitated. Well, honestly, most of us are losers and loners, so this is an upgrade. But still, there's nothing wrong with living in a nice place. It helps with recruitment.
I'll say. Anna roamed toward the spiral iron staircase that led upstairs, presumably to a bedroom.
Well, I'll lead you guys to it, Caro said. You know which door is yours, Anna.
Thank you, I said.
No problem. I'm glad you're here.
She hurried out of the room and down the stairs. Anna and I were silent until we heard the bottom door slam. Then we turned to each other. I wanted to go check out her apartment, but the elephant in the room was about to trample me.
Can you believe we're doing this?
I was still kind of shocked. We were survivors. Together, we could handle anything. We'd made it on our own all this time. But now, maybe we didn't have to?
I can't believe it.
No, I can. Anna shook her head. It's a game changer. This place is amazing. And the undercover protectorate? That's really cool. Being a part of something like that.
If we pass the training.
I wanted to. I wanted to get a hold of my magic. And if this was as cool as it seemed, I wanted a place here. Having a purpose other than survival would be awesome. We could help people who were as scared as we'd been. As we were. Because the threat wasn't over yet.
Let's focus on the survival part first, Anna said.
I'm worried about what Rickett said before he died.
About the woman.
Anna nodded.
I think you're right. He wasn't acting on his own at the end there. Someone had gotten to him. He didn't want money anymore. Just my blood, for some kind of ritual.
We need to find out who. Not knowing was an axe hanging over my neck. But at least now we have some help.
And help finding Rowan.
Anna spun in a circle, picking in the amazing view from all windows.
Rowan would love this.
Tears pricked my eyes. Rowan was the only thing that could make me cry.
She would.
We'll find her.
Anna swallowed hard.
If she's alive, we'll find her. I reached for Anna's hand, squeezing tight.
I love you, nerd.
Love you back, double nerd.
I grinned. Let's go check out your room.
Yeah. We walked out of my apartment and down the stairs, both quiet. Thinking. Whatever came at us, we would figure it out. Together.
Epilogue.
The day after we moved into our new apartments, Kate and I returned to Venice to help Squeedo clear out the remnants of Ricketts' underground lair so his family could return. A crew from the Protectorate hauled off the stuff that Hetty might want to check out, and the Order of the Magica had agreed to make this a protected area for the Italian Cappies. All in all, a win. After we finished, Kate and I sat on the steps of San Zaccaria, catching our breath from the work and watching the sunset in a brilliant display of orange and pink.
I think you'll do well at the Protectorate, Kate said.
Thanks. We watched the sunset in silence for a while before I spoke. Why didn't you tell anybody about my new power?
Arak knew, and everyone else would eventually, as my powers manifested. But he hadn't spoken of it to anyone.
It's not my story to tell.
I smiled, liking that answer. A cool breeze rustled over my face, smelling of flowers, and night, and happiness. The last one was weird, but I swore it was true. The colors had faded from the sky, and Cade stood, reaching down for my hand to help pull me up. I took it, his large palm swallowing my own, the strength in his touch sending a frisson of pleasure zinging up my arm. I let him help me to my feet, my mind buzzing with awareness. He stood so close that the scent of his skin wrapped around me, bringing with it the smell of a storm at sea. It soaked into me, making my head spin. Heat seared, warm and fierce, sinking into my muscles and sending electricity blazing through me. I licked my lips, so intensely aware of him that it felt like we were one, and glanced up. His gaze was on my face, heat in his green eyes. Tension pulled at his jaw, as if he were resisting.
What? Me?
His lips parted, just slightly. He wanted to kiss me. With all the stress of the past few days, the past few years, riding on my back, all I wanted to do was forget. To do something fun and spontaneous, and totally free. I wanted Cade, and he wanted me. The heat that burned me came directly from him. From the grip of his strong hand that still cradled my own. A point of contact that seared me. I threw my arms around Cade's neck and kissed him. Once, hard on the mouth. His lips were full and soft, giving me a buzz unlike any I'd ever experienced. It spun through my head and veins, lighting me up like a live wire. He groaned, low in his throat, and his hand tightened on mine. I pulled away, panting. He swallowed hard, gaze hot. There was desire, but also something else in his eyes. He swallowed again, regret flashing across his face.
That can't happen again.
His voice was rough. Shit. You didn't like it?
I wanted it, but you're a trainee with the Protectorate now, he said. It's a conflict of interest.
So he did like it. But then my face flamed. I just made an ass of myself. And he was right. It was a conflict of interest. I wanted a place at the Protectorate, or at least to earn the right to be there and find Rowan, even if we didn't stay forever. So making out with Cade was a terrible freaking idea. Not to mention the whole trust thing. Growing close to Cade was a one-way ticket to a giant mess. I stepped back, nodding. You're totally right. Bad idea. Very bad idea. Sorry. I should have asked before I kissed you.
Don't be sorry. I should have said no, but I didn't want to.
His voice was low. Warm. Oh, hell. I stepped back a foot. My new life was confusing enough. New home, new job, new threat to my life. But then he had to go and say something like that? Something that made it so clear that he actually did want me. Ready to go? My voice squeaked. Awkward.
Aye.
His lips quirked up in a devastating smile. We turned and walked away from the church, headed to the boat waiting in the canal. As we silently crossed the square, tension thrummed between us like a living thing. Oh, my fates. With this between us, it was going to be damned hard to work with him in the future. Whatever the future might bring. The End. Up next is an excerpt from Hidden Magic, the beginning of Cass Clairaut's story. Cass was the fire soul who helped Bree in Magic's Bend, and her adventure is just as exciting. Afterwards, there is an author's note discussing the history in the book. Chapter 1. Jungle, Southeast Asia. 5 years before the events in Ancient Magic. How much are we being paid for this job again? I glanced at the dudes filling the bar. It was a motley crowd of supernaturals, many of whom looked shifty as hell. Not nearly enough for one as dangerous as this. Del frowned at the man across the bar, who was giving her his best sexy face. There was a lot of eyebrow movement happening. Is he having a seizure? Looks like it. Nix grinned. Though I've got to say, I wasn't expecting this. We're basically in a tree for magic's sake, in the middle of the jungle. Where are all these dudes coming from? According to my info, there's a mining operation near here. Though I'd say we're more under a tree than in a tree. I'm with Cass, Del said. Under, not in. Fair enough, Nix said. We were deep in Southeast Asia, in a bar that had long ago been reclaimed by the jungle. A massive fig tree had grown over and around the ancient building, its huge roots strangling the stone walls. It was straight out of a fairy tale.
Monks had once lived here, but a few supernaturals of indeterminate species had gotten a hold of it and turned it into a watering hole for the local supernaturals. We were meeting our contact here, but he was late.
Hey, pretty lady.
A smarmy voice sounded from my left.
What are you?
I turned to face the guy who was giving me the up and down, his gaze roving from my tank top to my shorts. He wasn't Clarence, our local contact. And if he meant, what kind of supernatural are you? I sure as hell wouldn't be answering. That could get me killed. Not interested is what I am, I said.
That's no way to treat a guy.
He grabbed my hip, rubbed his thumb up and down. I smacked his hand away, tempted to throat punch him. It was my favorite move, but I didn't want to start a fight before Clarence got here. Didn't want to piss off our boss. The man raised his hands.
Hey, hey, no need to get feisty. You three sisters?
I glanced at Nyx and Del, at their dark hair that was so different from my red. We were all about 20, but we looked nothing alike. And while we might call ourselves sisters, Drifur in our native Irish, this idiot didn't know that. Go away! I had no patience for dirtbags who touched me without asking. Run along and flirt with your hand, because that's all the action you'll be getting tonight. His face turned a mottled red, and he raised a fist. His magic welled, the scent of rotten fruit overwhelming. He thought he was going to smack me, or use his magic against me. Ha! I lashed out, punching him in the throat. His eyes bulged, and he gagged. I kneed him in the crotch, grinning when he keeled over.
Hey!
A burly man with a beard lunged for us, his buddy beside him following.
That's no way
to treat a guy, I finished for him as I kicked out at him. My tall, heavy boots collided with his chest, sending him flying backward. I never used my magic. Didn't want to go to jail and didn't want to blow things up. But I sure as hell could fight. His friend raised his hand and sent a blast of wind at us. It threw me backward, sending me skidding across the floor. By the time I'd scrambled to my feet, a brawl had broken out in the bar. Fists flew left and right, with a bit of magic thrown in. Nothing bad enough to ruin the bar, like jets of flame, because no one wanted to destroy the only watering hole for 100 miles, but enough that it lit up the air with varying magical signatures. Nyx conjured a baseball bat and swung it at a burly guy who charged her, while Del teleported behind a horned demon and smashed a chair over his head. I'd always been jealous of Del's ability to sneak up on people like that. All in all, it was turning into a good evening. A fight between supernaturals was fun.
Enough! The bartender bellowed. Or no more beer!
The patrons quieted immediately. Fights might be fun, but they weren't worth losing beer over. I glared at the jerk who'd started it. There was no way I'd take the blame, even though I'd thrown the first punch. He should have known better. The bartender gave me a look, and I shrugged, hiking a thumb at the jerk who'd touched me. He should have kept his hands to himself.
Fair enough, the bartender said.
I nodded and turned to find Nyx and Del. They'd grabbed our beers and were putting them on a table in the corner. I went to join them. We were a team. Sisters by choice, ever since we'd woken in a field at 15, with no memories, other than those that said we were fire souls on the run from someone who had hurt us, who was hunting us. Our biggest goal, even bigger than getting out from under our current boss's thumb, was to save enough money to buy concealment charms that would hide us from the monster who hunted us. He was just a shadowy memory, but it was enough to keep us running. Where is Clarence, anyway? I pulled my damp tank top away from my sweaty skin. The jungle was damned hot. We couldn't break into the temple until Clarence gave us the information we needed to get past the guard at the front. And we didn't need to spend too much longer in this bar. Del glanced at her watch, her blue eyes flashing with annoyance. He's 20 minutes late. Old man bastard said he should be here at 8. Old man bastard, OMB for short, was our boss. His name said it all. Dell, Nix, and I were fire souls, the most despised species of supernatural, because we could steal other magical beings' powers if we killed them. We'd never done that, of course, but OMB didn't care. He'd figured out our secret when we were too young to hide it effectively, and had been blackmailing us to work for him ever since. It had been 4 years of finding and stealing treasure on his behalf. Treasure hunting was our other talent, a gift from the dragon with whom legend said we shared a soul. No one had seen a dragon in centuries, so I wasn't sure if the legend was even true. But dragons were covetous, so it made sense they had a knack for finding treasure. "What are we after again?" Nix asked. "A pair of obsidian daggers," Del said. "Nice ones." "And how much is this job worth?" Nix repeated my earlier question. Money was always on our minds. It was our only chance at buying our freedom, but OMB didn't pay us enough for it to be feasible anytime soon. We kept meticulous track of our earnings, and saved like misers anyway.
$1,000 each?
Damn, that's pathetic. I slouched back in my chair and stared up at the ceiling, too bummed about our crappy pay to even be impressed by the stonework and vines above my head.
"Hey, pretty ladies."
The oily voice made my skin crawl. We just couldn't get a break here. I looked up to see Clarence, our contact. Clarence was a tall man, slender as a vine, and had the slicked-back hair and pencil-thin mustache of a 1940s movie star. Unfortunately, it didn't work on him, probably because his stare was like a lizard's. He was more Gomez Adams than Clark Gable. I'd bet anything that he liked working for OMB. "Hey, Clarence," I said. "Pull up a seat and tell us how to get into the temple." Clarence slid into a chair, his movement eerily snake-like. I shivered and scooted my chair away, bumping into Del. The scent of her magic flared, a clean hit of fresh laundry, as she no doubt suppressed her instinct to transport away from Clarence. If I had her gift of teleportation, I'd have to repress it as well.
"How about a drink first?" Clarence said.
Del growled, but Nix interjected, her voice almost nice. She had the most self-control out of the three of us. "No can do, Clarence. You know, Mr. Oribus." Her voice tripped on his name, probably because she wanted to call him OMB. "Wants the daggers soon. Maybe next time, though."
"Next time?"
Clarence shook his head like he didn't believe her. He might be a snake, but he was a clever one. His chest puffed up a bit. "You know I'm the only one who knows how to get into the temple. How to get into any of the places in this jungle. And we're so grateful you're meeting with us. Mr. Oribus is so grateful." Nix dug into her pocket and pulled out the crumpled envelope that contained Clarence's pay. We'd counted it and found, unsurprisingly, that it was more than ours combined, even though all he had to do was chat with us for 2 minutes. I'd wanted to scream when I'd seen it. Clarence's gaze snapped to the money.
"All right, all right."
Apparently, his need to be flattered went out the window when cash was in front of his face. Couldn't blame him, though. I was the same way. "So, what are we up against?" I asked. The temple containing the daggers had been built by supernaturals over 1,000 years ago. Like other temples of its kind, it was magically protected. Clarence's intel would save us a ton of time and damage to the temple if we could get around the enchantments rather than breaking through them.
"Dralapala. A big one."
"A gatekeeper?" I'd seen one of the giant, stone monster statues at another temple before.
"Yep."
He nodded slowly.
"Impossible to get through. The temple's as big as the Titanic. Hidden from humans, of course. But no one's been inside in centuries, they say."
Hidden from humans was a given. They had no idea supernaturals existed, and we wanted to keep it that way. "So how'd you figure out the way in?" Del asked. And why haven't you gone in? Bet there's lots of stuff you could fence in there. Temples are usually full of treasure.